James Robert Murphy holds a BS from State University of New York with a concentration in arts management. He has been with the City of El Paso, Texas, as their Director of Development for the El Paso Museum of History since 2006. Today, we're going to talk about his novel, The Right to Kill. So, James, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, one of the reasons why I'm starting with this question is because I didn't know you until I read your book, and I hadn't really kind of heard about you, except for I know you're pretty prominent in the cultural activities in El Paso, that you do a lot with the museum, I think it is.
Right, the El Paso Museum of History.
Where are you from, and how did you get in this crazy thing called writing?
I'm from a little town south of Syracuse, Nedro, New York, a town of 2,200 people. And I worked...
Wait a minute. 2,200 people now or 2,200 people when you grew up?
2,200 people still.
Wow! That's amazing.
I looked it up a couple of years ago. I'm like, it's still 2,200 people?
Wow.
And, you know, a little tiny hillbilly town south of Syracuse. And, you know, we went to school out in the country, and I worked for my father most of my life in the residential remodeling business. Oh. And in the late 80s, I was hired by the Cultural Resources Council, which is sort of like the Museum and Cultural Affairs Department here, because I'd started a blues festival up there in 1992, and I'd learned how to raise money. And they were looking for a development director, someone they'd never had before, and I'd never really worked for anybody else besides my father. So I took this job with them and was finally getting a real paycheck, which I'd never received before either.
It's nice to get one.
You know, when you're in the construction business, you're the last to get paid.
Wow.
My father was heartbroken, and but it was something that I had to do.
Absolutely.
You know, I had to move on. Wow. And that's how, when I moved to El Paso here in 2004, I was hired by El Paso Opera as their general director. I didn't know anything about opera. I could barely spell it. But I could raise money, and that's what they were looking for.
Nice. And, you can be a university president.
Yes, that's my goal.
Awesome. What brought you to writing? I mean, you know, you're a successful person. You do your job. You have your creative outlet. Why do you write?
Well, I'm a songwriter, and I think that started it many, many years ago, you know, the poetry thing. But in 2008, 2009, Arcadia Publishing set up an office in Austin, and they blanketed the Southwest with proposals to write their Images of America series. So I just, on a fluke, it was a picture book, right? So I sent in a proposal, and they took, let me do it. So that was my first book, El Paso 1850 to 1950. And that worked out pretty good. And so it started something for me. If I can write a picture book, maybe I can...
You got the bug.
I did.
You were bitten, and once you're bitten by that publishing bug, it's really hard to, you know, to not write, to not want to publish.
And so my second book, when I wrote it, I sent it off to a company up in Arizona, and they critiqued it for me. And it was just very short at that time. And they said, you know, it looks good, but you got to release. You got to let it go. And so I rewrote that whole thing.
You're talking about The Right to Kill now.
I'm talking about My Life Before I Decided to Commit Suicide,
Okay.
A love story.
Yes.
And I mean, that just opened it all up. Once I started to really express myself and lay things out on the table, and it was like, you know what, I might be able to do this.
James, I'm sure you've been told this, but you know, you got a really good voice.
Thank you.
You've been told that before, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. And I imagine being on stage, it helps you to have that kind of voice. Do you sing?
I do.
And you do gigs around El Paso, right?
Not so much anymore, but I've had pretty good schedules in the past.
I want to ask you, who are your literary influences, especially fiction writers, and especially those that might help us understand the aesthetic of this novel?
Well, there's the problem. I'm not much of a reader, and so I don't have the F. Scott Fitzgeralds and that lineup that I've read and that I can say, you know, these were my influences. I just don't have that. Even as a songwriter, as a musician, I always had difficulty learning other people's music, so it was easier for me to write music. So when it comes to writing a book, per se, it's easier for me just to go on my own. I really don't have a number of
influences. Nonetheless, when you live within a culture, you begin to develop certain aesthetics and certain, you know, ideas about narrative and about stories and how they work and the way the reader is going to receive them, whether they're going to receive it as information or they're going to receive it as a movie in their head and going to be absorbed in the story. And so clearly you have a sense of narrative that you must get from somewhere. So what are the stories in your life that just really compel you and make you think, wow, I'd love to write a story?
Well, early on, someone said to me, and you've heard this yourself, write what you know. Mm-hmm. So my whole thought is to write about people in my life and to describe them as true characters. Most of the characters in my writing, you could meet these people and say, that's exactly what Murphy said. Because I take their intricacies and write them out on paper. And that's I want people to see things. I don't want them to have to. And it's got to do with my grant writing experience. When I write a grant, I don't want the person that's reviewing that to have any questions about anything. I want them to know everything I'm talking about. So I use that in my
writing. That's a wonderful guideline. So the fact is that when we read this novel, we might recognize some of the people. Maybe one of them is our producer, Norma Martinez. I know what character she is, too. No, that makes a lot of sense. But what I mean is your sense of story. You know, what kind of stories have fascinated you as a kid, as an adult? Just what kind of stories compel you that you don't want to give up?
Well, I'm an emotional person, and the older I get, the more emotional I become. So, I'm sensitive. I can watch the Olympics, and, you know, there's almost a tear in my eye, but I refuse to cry. So it's the emotion, I think, that drives me the most, telling the inner truth. And what I think I've learned from that is that the more I tell about other people is the more you reveal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've learned that in my suicide book, the more I talked about other people, it's more of a description of me than anything else.
You know, Borges has this fantastic metaphor when he's talking about the work of Edgar Allan Poe. You know, he says Poe is a great writer, not for one particular work, but for his entire body of work. And he compared him to a painter who spends his entire life painting everything he could think of in the universe. I mean, absolutely everything, furniture and grass and trees and birds and pimples. I mean, just absolutely everything. And then at his death, he's about to die, and he steps back and he looks at everything he's painted and he sees his own face. Right? Yeah. Almost everything we write is a reflection
of
us. So give us an idea of The Right to Kill. What is this book about?
The Right to Kill is actually about people's rights to take care of their neighborhood and to take care of themselves. Where if you have someone in your neighborhood that is just, you know, completely bothersome, then you, in the long run, the state of Texas passes the Right to Kill Act. And you can now petition.
That's scary. It's almost like you could believe it.
When I explain this to people, they say, when did they pass that?
Yeah.
But you could petition the state of Texas in my book. Say a lot of it's about abuse. So if you're an abused woman, you could finally, and this was passed because women can vote. Once this went on the state docket, then man, this thing passed. And so you could petition the state. If you've been beat up your whole relationship, then you can petition to kill your husband. But the thing is, once you petition that, then you have to follow through. You can't have your uncle do it.
Right.
You've got to do it. And that's
interesting.
That's the emotional part of this, because once that something like that takes place, the planning of it, planning's no good, because when you plan something, it never works out the way you want. Most of these, there's only a couple actual killings in this book. They should take place spontaneously. And when they do take place, then that's where all the power is. You finally get to release your inner energy. And there's you know, you've taken care of something that's bothered you or bothered your neighbors, per se, forever.
When you began to write this book, did you start with an idea, like, I want to write this idea, or did you start with a character? And if there is a character that you most identify with in this novel, who is it? And tell us about him.
Well, I did start with an idea. There's a house across the street from me that has a wind chime, and I wrote about that in the book. You know, these wind chimes, this huge wind chime blows every time the wind blows. Well, not everybody in the neighborhood wants to hear that wind chime. So
someone's got to kill that person.
Like, the original title was Cleaning Up the Neighborhood.
Right.
But I didn't, you know, after a while, it's like, well, who's going to buy that? But so it was that incident that sort of like drove me to say, well, why can't we take care of these instances? And actually, politically speaking, if I can talk for a minute.
Of course.
This goes on to before Trump started his thing. You know, there's President Wakefield and the Republican Guard in this book in the late 70s. You know, they start to run the country. Yeah. Well, President Wakefield shuts the borders down in 2 weeks. You've got to, if you're an illegal immigrant, you got to get out. If you're a U.S. citizen and you want to get back in, you got 2 weeks to get back. They closed the borders down. We're not importing. We're not exporting. We're making everything in the United States. Everything has to work. Everybody has to work.
Right.
And surprisingly, this works.
Uh-huh.
You know, the rest of the world is going, are you people crazy? We close the prisons down. We kill all the prisoners in the prisons. It's a, you know,
let's get
this thing together. And it works.
Yeah, that's funny because as I was looking over this, I wanted to ask you about the relationship between what happens in this book and the current political election circus that's going on with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and a lot of similarities. And I can imagine that Trump is not something that just came out of nowhere. It has been developing over the years. So I can imagine that, you know, that there may not have been a conscious connection on your part. But now that the book is out and now that what is going on, what parallels do you hope that the reader might glean from this?
Well, this was written before
absolutely.
Trump started his rhetoric. I think that it would be interesting if everyone in this country had to work,
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
Right.
There's work for people with disabilities. Welfare is cut off.
Uh-huh.
You've got to survive. And we pay everybody a fair wage. It's not like we're, you know, taking things over and we're going to starve everybody to death. We're going to take care of everybody.
By we, you mean?
By the government.
The government.
And, you know, we're just going to rebuild this country from the East Coast to the West Coast. And we can certainly make enough food to sustain ourselves. We can make every piece of machinery we need. We can make everything we need. Let's just concentrate on that for a little while, and then we'll open things back up.
That's interesting. So is that the plot of the novel, or is that a future that you envision that's possible?
Well, what happens is there's two of the six main characters continue. The six of us pull off some shenanigans and take care of business a little bit. Well, in the end of the book, there's two guys who have actually figured out through mathematics where the next war is going to take place.
That's funny. Yeah, that's interesting.
And they, on their own, have formed this secret society, and they're trying to manipulate world power so that it's peaceful out there. So while we've kind of retired from this, there's two of the six that are still out there trying to manipulate peace.
I'm talking to James Robert Murphy, whose novel is called The Right to Kill. James, where can people get a copy of this?
Oh, you can pick it up on my site, jamesrobertmurphy.com. And that's about the only place.
Okay. And what are you working on now?
I'm working on a new book that is going to take place altogether in El Paso. And it's about three different characters, and they're each kind of quirkier in their own way. But when something happens at one particular time, and, you know, all hell's going to break loose.
Well, thank you, James Robert Murphy, for joining us on Words on a Wire. I'm Daniel Chacon. We'll be right back.